first pitch to Evan, launched to deep left field. This one's on its way, and how far will it go? A massive homer for Evan Longoria, and the Rays take a 1-0 lead.
Welcome to Countdown to Opening Day.
Here's a swing and a high fly ball. Left center field. Jennings back at the wall, jumps up, and makes the catch. He took away a home run.
Coming up, we bring you the inside scoop from Rays players, coaches, and front office executives as the Rays prep for the 2015 season.
Swinging a ground ball to third. Evan on a tough in-between hop has it. Throws across and the Rays have swept the Red Sox.
Now, to get you ready for opening day, here are the voices of the Rays, Andy Freed and Dave Wills.
Well, it's good to hear some baseball. Soon we'll be seeing some baseball, and it is pretty much upon us as we count down to opening day 2015. The Rays and the Baltimore Orioles will open things up on April the 6th, some 53 days from now, but there's many other dates to check off leading up to opening day 2015. This is our Countdown to Opening Day radio show with Dave Wills. I'm Andy Freed. Neil Solons is here. We're going to be joined by Matt Silverman, Evan Longoria, as this hour-long program comes on. If you're just finding us here, we're here every Thursday from 7 until 8, leading up to ultimately opening day on April the 6th. But Dave, of all those dates that we all start to look forward to are just about here between Fan Fest and reporting days, and finally March 5th is going to be real baseball. But, you know, it's amazing too. Everything does start a little bit later this year, just the way the calendar lays out. Opening day's a little later, spring training, everything's just a little bit later this year, but at least it's almost here.
Yeah, usually when we get pretty close here to Valentine's Day and then also my wife's birthday on February 19th, we're already playing some baseball. We're already, you know, you're hearing the crack of the bat. You're hearing the pop in the mitt, so on and so forth. But still got about a little more than a week to go. And, you know, we're hearing more and more about what's going on at Tropicana Field. We had a great conversation last week on this show with Kevin Cash and also with Alex Cobb. And then it was nice to see some of the local media cover some of those morning workouts at Tropicana Field to get some of the verbiage that we heard from Alex. Chris Archer was very outspoken as to how he expects this season to go. And he seems to think that we are much improved, or at least improved in several areas as we go into this 2015 season. And then all of a sudden now, too, you start to see some of the scribes, and I can't blame them, trekking out of the Northeast and getting down to Fort Myers or coming down into Tampa and starting to cover what's going on with the Yankees and with the Red Sox. And then you start getting things tilted to the East Coast bias as to what's going on with them. But, you know, it is nice to be talking about baseball. And, you know, again, a good friend of ours, James Shield, signed a rather large contract with the San Diego Padres, which good for him. It's close to his hometown. It's a situation that's going to be good for him and his family. And I think it's also good for the Rays that he's not in the American League again, we have not done very, very well against guys that were once with us and then facing them again. So I don't know when we'll see the San Diego Padres again, maybe in the postseason, who knows, but at least we know we won't see James Shields for at least a year, maybe two, during the regular season.
What were three of the best games against the Rays last year? Matt Garza, James Shields, and David Price, and the Rays won that one against David Price.
Mm-hmm. So again, it's good to see some of the things starting to, you know, take shape. And, you know, I'm getting more and more excited. Yeah. I left last week's show after talking with Kevin Cash very, very pumped up. And, again, the things that Kevin said on air were the same things he said off air. And it's the same thing with Alex Cobb. What you get is what you hear is what you get. I mean, he's not saying it just to say it and get the fans all pumped up. And then when the lights are off and the microphones are off, he says something different. I think these guys genuinely believe that this team is going to be a better team than a lot of people seem to think, a better team than the 77-win team that stumbled throughout most of 2014. And, yes, we might be going in with lower expectations. And you know, I know that you don't like the high expectations. I don't mind them. I like going in with high expectations. I think that, again, when you do that, that means that people seem to think that you're going to be pretty good. And we didn't live up to them. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But I think we have an opportunity to surprise some people. I like everybody else that's really, really close. It's kind of anxious to see how this whole offense plays out. But I think that, and we'll talk about it here in just a couple of moments with Matt Silverman, the Rays president of baseball operations. Most, if not all, of the things that he did since he took over as the top baseball guy in this organization, I applaud him. I mean, it's amazing. There's been some addition by subtraction. And then there's been some addition by addition, which, again, I it makes me excited for what we're going to see next week or the next couple of weeks in Port Charlotte.
And even though we didn't really know Matt Silverman when he was a student, I'll bet he was pretty good at math. So let's hope that the addition by subtraction and addition by addition may be working out, as we are joined now by the Rays president of baseball operations, Matt Silverman. And first of all, were you good at math?
I was pretty good at math, although once I got to calculus, it started to get a little bit above my head.
Yeah, I never really even got to that point. But what about the expectation? Because, you know, like Dave and I kind of go back and forth. I tend to not like them too high, probably because I'm a neurotic, and Dave's a pretty good optimist, and he likes them high. But I remember a year ago when the expectations were so high for this team, I remember Stu Sternberg was saying that it made him fidgety. It made him nervous, like, what could go wrong? Maybe he's a neurotic. How do you come down this year on the expectation? Do you like them high or do you like them lower?
I think I prefer them lower. And there's a little bit of the art of surprise with teams not necessarily thinking that we're going to be as good as we have been in the past, that we may not be as formidable of an opponent. But what I really care about is the internal expectations, and they're high because our guys have confidence in themselves and their ability and the well-roundedness of the club. And that's what really matters. You know, you got guys like Archer and Cobb talking. I heard you, you know, mentioning that earlier. They believe. Kevin Cash took on this job because he believes we can win this year and we can win going forward. And that's what really matters, and that's the mindset we have coming this spring this year.
You know, Matt, you were named a president of baseball operations after being president of the organization for the last several years. I don't know if this is a fair question or not, but when you took over as a president of the baseball operations, did the plan shift a little bit as to the thought process as to what we were going to do in 2015? Because it seems to me that a lot of the things that Andrew had kind of done and some of the guys that he acquired, I'm not saying that it was just picked out, you know, person by person, but I just kind of wonder, do you think things would still be the same? Would we be looking at the same type of team now if the old management had still been kind of secure? Is this more of once you took over, you thought this is the way it should be done?
I think the changes allowed us a little bit more freedom in our decision-making and gave us a different perspective on things. And so that freedom was something that we embraced. We had the opportunity to go out and find a new manager, and we did that. And as we went through that process, I think we became more comfortable with the idea of change and that some of that change could be good for this organization. And once you start taking on some, yeah, the next little bit of change isn't as disruptive because you've already disrupted everything. So we sort of get to reset things heading into the spring training. We have a lot of the same coaches, but we have a new manager. We have some new players. At the same time, a lot of the same players. So it's a good blend of the past, you know, of the culture and the foundation that we've had, along with a lot of newness. And I think that injection into our culture is going to be a good thing for this organization.
How much of the offseason, at least in the beginning parts, was trying to figure out exactly what happened last year? And in what you're listening to what you're saying here, did some of that call for maybe a little tweaking of organization philosophy? Has there been a tweaking of that? And how much of that was preceded by what ended up being the 2014 team?
Yeah, I think a lot of things have been written about our 2014 season, you know, what went wrong, what went right. What we still believe is that the talent level was high, but it didn't end up with the results that we expected. And if we played that season over again, we're more likely to win more games than we did, but that doesn't mean we're satisfied. So we did the diagnosis, you know, we did the autopsy on the 2014 season. We learned some things, but we still felt good about the overall talent level. And it was about juggling things and reordering some things. We had some additions, we had some subtractions, but when we get to camp next week, we feel that the talent level on the major league club is as good, if not better. And at the same time, our system has been bolstered, and we feel even better about the future of this organization.
Rays president of baseball operations, Matt Silverman, joining us on our Countdown to Opening Day show with Andy Freed. I'm Dave Wills. We're here till 8 o'clock, and then coming up at the bottom of the hour, we'll visit with Rays third baseman Evan Longoria. But, you know, Matt, one of the things we heard from Alex Cobb in our conversation with him last week was that he feels like you have given some of the players, especially some of the guys who have been here for a while, some kind of, I don't know, maybe for lack of a better term, ownership to this team, where he really, really felt happy with the fact that, you know, you guys have had open dialogue as to some of the moves and some of the things that have been done. And he said not only with the players, but also with some of the guys, you know, again, the trainers, the clubhouse staff, the guys that are picking up the towels and cleaning off the cleats. I mean, I get the feeling that we know that's your managerial style, and I don't think you've really changed it a whole lot from when you were president of the baseball of the business side to now where you're the president of the baseball side. That you like to gather as much information as you can, and getting it from the guys that are down in, for lack of a better term, the trenches is probably as good as it gets. In addition to the stuff you pick up off the computer.
Yeah, look, I like to listen, and I like a diversity of opinions, and I like as much input as possible, and as much as possible, I want this to be a we organization. I think if you count the prepositions, we're going to say we a lot more than we say I. So this is Alex's team. This is Archer's team. This is Longo's team. This is Cash's team. It's all of ours. And we're all in this together to make it a better place and to improve our performance on the field. So the way to do that, in my opinion, is to get everyone on board and to make sure that you're communicating, that the communication goes both ways. And so, yeah, I spoke to a lot of players, coaches, trainers this off season, and they spoke back to me, and they spoke to Eric, and they spoke to Chaim, and they spoke to Mitch, and they spoke to RJ. I mean, that's the dialogue that we need to have going in our organization to get better. That should be a competitive advantage of us, and I like the fact that it's taken hold. I think it's going to be even better in spring training when we're all together. Then we're going to learn things. We're going to find out what's been going right, what's hasn't been going right, and make sure that we have the ability to make those improvements. And all those things together will make it better for our players and give us a better chance to win.
Dave touched on it there, but is that something, Matt, that you learned from being more of the president on the business side? You know, I know as an employee, you always feel good for your company when you feel empowered, when you feel like you're being listened to and you feel valued. Was that something that you brought over from running the business side of things to now the baseball side of things?
I think there's strength in numbers and there's strength in voices, and we're only going to be as good as the entire organization. And so a big part of our job in baseball operations is to make sure we get the most out of everything that we have. And if there are places where we need to bolster resources, where we need to fill in some blanks, we can do that. But the only way to know that those blanks are there are to listen and to find out. So I feel like it's been a very cooperative effort. We were sort of forced into it. We were in the trenches, and we were in crisis mode in a way because there were so many things that we had to do. And in a way, it allowed us to gel more quickly, to become a cohesive unit. And I think the way that we're operating as an organization, as a baseball department, and as a clubhouse, is better than it has been in the past. You know, we see the opportunity, and I'm looking forward to getting down to Port Charlotte and continuing a lot of these conversations.
Well, you know, you talk a little bit about crisis mode. I mean, let's face it, we did not have the greatest of seasons, and then all of a sudden, here we are in mid-October, and Andrew Friedman gets the call from the Dodgers to become their president of baseball operations, and then you slide over, and most of us felt that that was a very seamless transition. Anybody who was within the organization knew that you were involved with baseball things. I mean, it wasn't just you sat in your office and worried about corporate sales or whatever and communications or broadcasting or whatever. We know that you had your thumbprint on what was going on the baseball side as well. But then the whole Joe Maddon thing kicks in, and I guess the crisis mode level raised a little bit. When did Kevin Cash come onto your radar? I mean, you know, I go back to last year and wasn't even really thinking, obviously, about who would be our new manager if Joe had ever left. But I don't think Kevin Cash would have been on my first 2, 3, 4, or 5 lists until after he interviewed with the Texas Rangers job, and everything we heard from the Rangers was how impressive he was. Was that really kind of the beginning of when you started thinking, you know, he could be a guy that could be a possible manager, or had this been a guy that was on your radar before that?
And there wasn't a radar before that because we didn't have any expectation that there would be a change in our manager role. And so we went to work and we started looking and asking around. But just like you, you know, that the Texas Rangers search and you know, Kevin's name and the feedback that we heard from his participation in that process really got us interested. And we started asking around even more so. You know, there's some symmetry there. When we hired Joe Maddon, he had been passed over the year before with Boston. And he didn't get that job, but everyone said great things about him, that he was going to be a manager one day. And you know, lo and behold, the next year we hire him. And we heard the same things about Kevin Cash. He did great in the Rangers process for whatever reasons. They chose someone else. But everyone said he's going to be a manager one day. And lo and behold, a few weeks later, he's our manager. So, you know, I think, you know, timing is key with all these things. And we knew that we had a chance to get Kevin now. And that if we didn't get him now, we probably wouldn't have a chance in the future. And so, you know, we took the plunge together. He's been fantastic. He's really... he's taken ownership of this club, but has the same approach that it's all about the team. It's about the organization. It's about the power of the collective. And I know he's even more excited than I am to get down to Port Charlotte.
We're joined by Matt Silverman here on our Countdown to Opening Day radio show with Dave Wilsheim, Andy Freed. And, you know, Matt, one of the trends around Major League Baseball as we look at this year coming up and this team that you've put together, and, you know, runs are down in baseball. Who would have ever thought back in the 90s that the cycle of baseball would actually continue? You know, there those waves when hitting seems to rule and waves where pitching seems to rule, but we're back in one of those modes where runs are very, very hard to come by. And I wonder if in constructing a team, does that play into the Rays' hand a little bit? We know that the Rays have good pitching. We know that the Rays have been the envy of many teams with regard to stability in the starting rotation and putting together a bullpen. So does that trend work in the Rays' favor in a sense? We know runs may be hard to come by at times for this team and have been for a couple of years, but could that line up okay, that runs are kind of hard to come by all around Major League Baseball right now?
Yeah, I mean, I think the fact that the run scoring is down puts even more a premium on execution and doing all the small things that can lead to that extra run or two. And those mean a lot more than they did a few years ago. So the fundamentals really matter. Base running really matters. Getting that extra base really matters. Preventing the base matters. And I think that's going to be a big focus of ours this year. It has been for many years, but even more so this year, because we know that you aren't going to have those 4, 5, 6 run innings. You're just not likely to have those anymore with the way that the pitching is going. But we know that we're going to be good on defense. And we know that we're going to have good pitching. And what's different this year than last year is I feel like we're going to have a more balanced lineup. There are certainly places where we could augment, and obviously everyone's looking for power, and we could use more power. I think we're going to be a much more difficult lineup 1 through 9. There aren't going to be the same number of soft spots. It's going to be a harder lineup for pitchers to get through, and I think that's going to help us score more runs.
You know, Matt, and again, visiting with Matt Silverman, Rays President of Baseball Operations, on our Countdown to Opening Day show here for the next couple of minutes. You know, when I look back to 2014, I think about how that team, especially coming out of the gates, obviously we were kind of hands were tied a little bit with a couple of guys because of option situations, and you wanted to give them a shot, but we didn't have the versatility, obviously, that we've had in the past, and we didn't have the guy to come off the bench to maybe get the big pinch hit. I mean, you know, it's outcome biased. Who knows what's going to happen when a guy comes off the bench all the time, but we didn't have the lefty to do that, or we didn't have this, and it seemed like we were a 25-man roster that was playing like 22 or 23, whereas in years past, we were a 25-man roster that played like there was 28 or 29, and we talked a lot during the broadcasts about how there were times where we got outrayed. I mean, is that a philosophy? Is that a thought process that you guys are trying to get back to as you put this roster together, not only this year, but for years to come?
Yeah, it is. And we value versatility and flexibility. And when we look at the middle infielders that we're going to have in camp this year, we have shortstops and second basemen, and we hope that they can switch around, they can move around. You know, when we acquired Souza, it's because he's a good outfielder, needs a good bat, but he also has the potential to fill in at first base as necessary. That type of versatility is always important to us. But we haven't been good at base running as good as we used to be. We're not as aggressive. We're also not as effective, and that's a place where we can improve. And I like when there are areas for us to improve. If we were hitting on all cylinders and still winning 77 games, that's not good. But we see many places for this team to improve. Many places for our offense to improve, and that's what gives us the confidence heading into spring.
You touched on middle infield a little bit, and just recently the Rays have added a couple of guys, Alexi Casilla and Jake Elmore, who have big league experience. And I'm curious if competition, how important that is moving into this spring training, because you got Nick Franklin, who's still looking to prove himself, so to speak. You got Estrubel Cabrera, who we're not sure if he's going to be second or short. You got Tim Beckham and Hakju Lee. I mean, there's going to be quite a rotation going on. Kevin Cash said to us last week that the common denominator has to be that Cabrera is ready. As Drubal is ready to go, whether it be at short, whether it be at second, where he's most comfortable. So I imagine that's the case. But what about the competition? I didn't even mention Logan Forsythe. Is there going to be a lot of competition for middle infield spots in spring training?
Yeah, there's competition. And we certainly try not to get blinded by spring training stats. It's small sample size. It's not the same level of competition. And one guy hits 450, the other guy hits 225. It doesn't really mean that much to us. It's about the process of getting there. But there is going to be competition. We're going to see how these guys play. We're going to see how they fit into our roster. And there's good competition. We have open spots, especially in our infield, for these guys to come in and show what they've done this offseason and what they can do this spring. No matter who breaks camp with us in April, the other guys are going to get their chance too. I think last year we had 43 guys play on our 25-man roster. Things happen. Things you don't expect happen, and guys will get their opportunities. Kevin Kiermaier seized his opportunity, and now everyone has great expectations for him. A lot of these guys are going to have their opportunity to prove themselves, and I think they're ready and they're hungry. Just the fact that we have so many numbers of guys gives us a better chance to be able to have the performance we need.
Matt, I know it's probably not fair to ask you to pinpoint just a couple of guys, but I know that as I get ready to go down to spring training and we start doing the games beginning, I think it's March 5th, a couple of guys that I'm really going to be intrigued in watching closely are going to be our new catcher, Rene Rivera, who obviously that's an area that needed some improvement, was the catching situation, both maybe behind the plate and next to the plate, consistently anyway. And then Steven Souza, I know that there was a lot of chagrin when Will Myers was moved along, but we've heard a lot of good things from our AAA people and from some minor league people, even Rocco Baldelli, about Steven Souza. Is it fair to say those two guys could be kind of, I don't want to say difference makers, but boy, if they're good, It could be a fun time at St. Pete this year.
And we're looking for solid seasons from those guys. I don't want to put too much pressure on any individual player, but they will be in focus just because they're new and they came over in a high-profile transaction. I think the fun part of spring is that we have a lot of new faces, and we have a lot of new people to get to know and to see who they are and how they perform, and not just at the major league level, but at the minor league level. We're going to have Robertson and Powell in major league camp. Oakland extended the invitation to them before the trade, and we honored that. So we're going to have two young guys who normally wouldn't be in camp with us and get a chance to look at them. When we had our rookie development program, a lot of our new players that we acquired in trades came over to the Trop, and it was great to start to get to know them and see what they can do. And I think that's exciting. We know our current players. We know the ones who've been here for a long time, whether they're major league players or minor league players. But we have a lot of new guys to get to know and to integrate them, and I think that is going to be a nice jolt of energy for the whole organization.
It's very interesting you say. I was going to ask you about that because, there's so much research that goes on before a trade happens, and there's been some big numbers of guys coming back that there are so many fresh faces. But take a guy like Burt Smith, for example. That's a guy that, we saw him in his big league debut. We've seen him on video. We obviously, you've seen a lot more than that, you and Eric and Chaim and the whole crew. How much do you think you know a player before you get him? And then I imagine it's like Christmas morning once pitchers and catchers report because you want to finally see what you have. So how much do you still have to learn about a lot of guys, and how much do you think that you know about particular guys? Just say, for example, a Burt Smith.
It's like peeling, the way – the layers of the onion. We think we know a lot, and then when we get to know the players, we have them in the flesh, and we're having conversations, and we're seeing what they can do. It just intensifies our knowledge, and everything that we've learned about Birch, about so many of the other players we've acquired this offseason has been great. And that means we're doing our job when it comes to researching, to doing the background, to making sure that we know what we're getting. We don't want those surprises. You don't want to be negatively surprised when a guy comes in and you learn something you didn't know before. We feel really good about the process and really excited to welcome these guys, to get to know them, to make sure there's not too much pressure on their shoulders, but they know the expectations that we have for them, and that we're very excited they're part of the organization.
Matt, as we close this out, and again, thanks for taking the time, and looking forward to seeing you down in Port Charlotte within the next week or so. But pitching, again, is still going to be at the forefront for this team. And, you know, last year we ran into some injuries early on with Matt Moore and Alex Cobb going by the wayside. It took David a little while to get going before he ultimately was traded. Chris Archer had some nice starts and then had some signs of, again, of being a young pitcher at times. And Jake Odorizzi it really showed some progress throughout the year. And then the trade that did bring Drew Smyly and the way he pitched until he was shut down. You know, this team is built around pitching and defense. We talked on the defense a little bit, and we expect to be improved from where we were a year ago. But I think not only am I excited about our rotation, which I still think is as good as anybody's in the America, or at least in the division, and maybe if Matt does come back healthy in the American League, but I think our bullpen is more physical. And even without Jake, who might not be there for the first few weeks, I liked some of the swing and miss stuff that you've acquired as well. And I think we have a chance to be a shutdown team if they have the lead with 3, 4, maybe even 5 guys at the disposal of Kevin Cash, especially if, say, Grant Belfour returns to anywhere near the form he had a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I know Grant's been working hard, and he's fired up this year to come back and show what he's all about. But you're right. The bullpen is full of guys who we can trust in late in the game, ahead, or with the score tied, and that's what you want. And we want to give Kevin as many options as possible and feel comfortable about bringing in these guys. And, you know, we had a couple guys to depart, but at the same time, we've been able to bolster. And I think Frieri is someone to keep your eye on. Jepsen is someone we're very excited about. These are guys who know how to pitch in the ninth inning. These guys know how to pitch in high leverage situations, and you can't have too many of those guys. So we're deep there, and I think we're also deep when it comes into our farm system and the other arms that we're going to have in Durham, and you need those numbers. But pitching is our strength, and you kind of glossed over the starting rotation, but it made me smile because you're talking about guys. You're talking about guys that every night can go out and give us a chance to win, and that's what you want. You know, Jake Odorizzi came on really strong, and he's someone that we're excited to have in our rotation. Alex Cobb is someone who can pitch at the top of the rotation, and you're comfortable with him against anyone. Archer has all the potential in the world. He started to show us, you know, last year especially, what he can do. And Drew Smyly was one of the best pitchers in the American League after the trade. So you feel really good about that, and I think it takes a little bit of the pressure off the offense to go out, do what it needs to do, score a few runs. I mean, 7 would be great, but, you know, hopefully 4 runs can get it done with our pitching staff, and that's the way we're going to win ball games.
As the final question, we've asked Kevin a couple of times, and we've seen him. Has he had a chance to catch his breath? We've never really asked you. I mean, you know, again, this was kind of a different situation, and there's kind of a different cycle between being the president of a baseball team and being the president of baseball operations. I mean, I think you even kind of touched on a little bit when you were named that it's more of a 24/7 cycle than it would be as the president of the business side of things. But have you had a chance to catch your breath? And how different is spring training going to be for you compared to what it's been like for the first, you know, 8, 9 years that you've been a part of this organization?
Yeah, for me, spring training is going to be an immersion, and I'm looking forward to that. I've in the past had to juggle different responsibilities, baseball and business, and didn't have the time to fully immerse myself in Port Charlotte. But now with, you know, with Brian leading the business and you know, all of the great people running the business side, I get to throw myself into Port Charlotte, enjoy all the wonders of Port Charlotte and our complex, and really dedicate my time there. So I'm very excited for that. January provides a little bit of a rest for us, and we're able to recharge, and I think we're all ready to get down there and get going. And, you know, having Kevin and some new members of the staff and some new players are going to give us a little bit of energy and get us even more excited about getting down there.
It's finally almost here. Matt, thanks so much for the time, and we will see you in Port Charlotte.
All right, sounds good. See you guys soon.
See you next week, Matt. Thank you very much. And thanks to Matt Silverman for joining us. Evan Longoria coming up here in just a little bit. Well, pitchers and catchers do report to Port Charlotte next week, and so do we come out to the Hooters in Port Charlotte, where we'll be broadcasting the Countdown to Opening Day show live from 7 to 8 next Thursday. Catch our live broadcast featuring Rays players and coaches. Enter to win cool Rays prizes and enjoy a Hooters sip and dip combo for just $17. Hooters, the original wing joint since 1983. He's Andy Freed. I'm Dave Wills. We'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll visit with Rays third baseman Evan Longoria as this week's edition of the Countdown to Opening Day show continues on 620 WDAE and the Rays Radio Network.
We invite you to kick off the Rays baseball season at the Rays Open Practice and Fan Day. That's Saturday, February the 28th at Charlotte Sports Park, down in Port Charlotte, of course. Free to the public. You can get autographs, enjoy free hot dogs, compliments of KM, get great giveaways, and more. For more information, just visit RaysBaseball.com/spring. Raise up, you know, raise up. That's it.
Raise up, and we'll be doing that again here very, very shortly. We're going to be back down in Port Charlotte ourselves, as we just said, next Thursday for our show. So for your folks that are down there, we look forward to seeing you. Then on the 21st, we got Rays Fan Fest, and that will get things going. In the that's really, I mean, that's where you and I met for the first time, just about 10 years ago, as a matter of fact. It's we get a little bit closer to that, and then we'll start broadcasting games. And we'll be broadcasting the Saturday and Sunday games on 620 WDAE, and the Neil Solons will be doing a number of the other games on RaysBaseball.com, and we'll be keeping you up to date as to what's happening around the Rays down in Port Charlotte and along this west coast of Florida as we, start to, you know, watching MLB Network a little more often here over the next last few days. I know that's your must-see TV throughout the entire offseason, but, you know, just the focus always seems to be on New York and Boston. But I think I'm fine with that. I think, again, just like Alex said, a lot of people are going to sit there and think, well, the Rays aren't going to be any good. Joe's gone. Andrew's gone. This guy's gone. That guy's gone. But it's what's here that I think could surprise some people. And, again, it starts with pitching and defense. It's interesting, though, today on Twitter, just in the last hour or so, I've been reading more and more about the low strike call. And they're talking about how we're having to bring that up. And would see if that would be, rather, if that does indeed happen and how that would affect the mindset of a team, again, that is built around pitching. But it's going to be interesting to see how things are hammered out. And I don't, you know, so what if it costs some runs? Move the game along. Make these guys go up there and swing the bat a little bit. And if it's a strike, it's a strike, whether it's at the knees or not. But I know ankle biters aren't strikes, but knee high should be a strike.
And I'm very interested to see, with the new commissioner moving forward, what is his fingerprint on this game? And it's not all going to be this year. We were talking in the sound booth earlier on about when they were talking about taking away shifts, and then Neil was saying, hey, it was just a trial balloon. He wanted to see how the reaction that he would get from it. But you do get the feeling that Rob Manfred wants to move this game forward a little bit. Certainly the game appears younger with a younger commissioner. And I'm interested. And he also doesn't appear to be afraid of change. So, man, I don't think we'll ever really see a pitch clock in there. I'd be pretty surprised if that actually happens. But I think there will be some things going on with Rob Manfred as the commissioner that will take on some of the things with pace of game and various other things moving forward and getting the game, I think, continuing in the 21st century in the popular conscious.
You know, we're always kind of – everybody's kind of worried about change. And sometimes change is good. Obviously, we just went through an off season full of it. And, you know, it's funny because – I recall the, you know, people talk about baseball trying to change things around, and you know, there was the talk about this going on, and they looked at I think it was our buddy Jerry, who's now with the Dodgers, Hunsaker, who said that he looked at a itinerary for general managers, and they talked about this, and this, and he wondered, well, then this must have been just from a couple of years ago. He said it was from like the 1970s, early 70s, and they're still talking about a lot of the same things now here in 2015. But people say, well, it's like trying to turn around an aircraft carrier in Tampa Bay. It's probably like trying to turn around 30 aircraft carriers in Tampa Bay at the same time in the right direction, and it's not always going to happen. So I know in a lot of sports that have been along for a long, long time, change, people are reluctant to do it because they feel like, well, there's nothing wrong. But, you know, you have to adapt to survive, and I think that it'll be interesting to see how things do go along here in the game of baseball. And I'm not caught up on 3 hours and 5 minutes or 3 hours and 12 minutes. I'm caught up on pace of the game sometimes, and that to me is the bigger thing. It's not the ultimate time of game. It's the pace of the game. There's been times where you and I have called games, and we felt like it took 2 hours and 20 minutes, and it was 2 hours and 50 minutes, 2 hours and 55 minutes, but it was a fun game to watch, and it didn't feel like it took that long.
Absolutely, and you know, baseball, it's been a barge. You know, it takes a while for that barge to get turned around. But I agree with you in that sense, too. You know, and with regard to that also, if you look back even, heck, 10 years, 20 years, to me, the biggest difference is batters stayed in the batter's box. I mean, that to me, if you're going to change anything of the game moving forward, I don't think you need a pitch clock. I think more of an enforcement of having the batter stay in the batter's box. And I do think, too, that there should probably be a limit on how many times the catcher can go to the mound. I think sometimes that
that kind of kills the pace of things going on. Yes, it's necessary. A guy's on second base, and there's an 8 or 9 pitch at bat, and yeah, you need to change up the size. Mm-hmm. There's things going on. But I would say that those would be the two things. Mark Tapkin wrote about it that Jim Cott was saying the other day, too, at the Ted Williams Hitters Hall of Fame. Why do guys have to constantly adjust their batting gloves after every pitch? You know, Mike Hargrove was known as the human rain delay back when he played, but now everybody's like that. So those would be the things that I think Rob Manfred should focus on. But ultimately, the game's a beautiful thing, but yes, it needs to evolve.
But why wouldn't you, though? I mean, when they started talking about the pace of game and picking up the pace of game, why wouldn't the first guy to be in that meeting not be Mark Burley? Why wouldn't you have a guy like that? It is that does what he does, that, you know, guys that pitch quickly and go in and say, all right, what are you doing? Why do you do it that way? And why can't this trickle down to other guys? And then bring in maybe some of the guys that do take forever, take a Buchholz or whatever that takes forever, and bring him in and go, well, why do you do what you do? And start to learn it that way, as opposed to bringing in, you know, Joe Torre or Tony La Russa or whatever, guys who haven't really played the game in a while. Yes, there were managers and very, very good ones. But why, again, just like Matt's going down and talking to the players and talking to the guys that are actually on the field, those are the guys I think that I'd be talking to. I'd be talking to R.A. Dickey and Mark Burley and some of the other pitchers that get games over in 2 hours and 25 or 2 hours and 30 minutes consistently, and then find out from the other guys that take so long, why does it take that long? What are you doing? What's in your mindset that it takes 29 seconds between pitches to get things done? And it would be, you know, some of our guys are in that mix as well. And I know that that's not an organizational philosophy, because when you talk to Jim Hickey, our pitching coach, he says throw fast, work quick, throw strikes, and get guys out and keep your fielders involved. And we had some guys over the last couple of years that were far from that.
Certainly not everybody can be a Mark Burley, but he does seem to be the guy that everyone looks to and say, how can he do what he does so differently? I can remember in the minor leagues, Dave, there were guys, and this was when I was in the Red Sox organization, that they would try to slow down a little bit because as minor league pitchers, they would start to rush and they wouldn't really get their head wrapped around some of the pitching philosophies. They could get by because their stuff was so good. I can remember there was a pitcher that every time he pitched, it was like 205, 206, and he was great, but he had a little bit of a major league career, but not much. He was great at double and triple A, but he was only okay in the big leagues. But I'm with you. Those guys should be involved. Players should absolutely have a say in that stuff because they're the guys that are performing it.
He's Andy Freed. I'm Dave Wills. Again, we are on our Countdown to Opening Day show. We're going to go till 8 o'clock tonight. And hoping to hook up here with Evan Longoria in the next couple of moments. You know, here's another thing that's been kind of growing over the last few years that I never, ever knew existed. I mean, to me, the holiday began on pitchers and catchers reporting. But now it seems like the holiday begins on truck day. Now everybody seems to be talking more and more about truck day. And a lot of the trucks from the Northeast and the Midwest are starting to make their ways to Florida or down to Arizona, whichever the case may be. But that seems to be one of the new holidays around Major League Baseball, the truck day celebration, watching the trucks being loaded on the loading docks, throwing all the uniforms and the sunflower seeds and the baseballs and what have you, and making that trek down to wherever they train, down in Florida or Arizona. That might be one of the newer holidays around the game of baseball.
It is, and I think it's spawned by two things. Twitter is one, and two, because the last couple of winters have just been brutal up north. And I think, you know, when you live up north, one of the most exciting things is when you start to kind of hear dispatches from down south, from Florida, from Arizona. I think people really do get a kick out of that. But I love the fact that the Rays have a truck day. I mean, because that could be, you could almost walk down to Port Charlotte.
Well, it's always good to see Hosey on TV and working and those guys and T and everybody, Brandon, and all those guys that do a great job. And again, they're going to be ready to go here. Those guys are the ones that show up real early and leave real late. And those are the guys that do most of the heavy lifting down at spring training.
And we do have, and now here is Evan Longoria. Evan, who, of course, is the Rays home run leader. In fact, he's the franchise home run leader, and he's pretty much going to own everything, I think, in the offensive category, except maybe stolen bases when his career is finally said and done with the Rays. But, Evan, thank you so much for taking a couple of moments for joining us here on Countdown to Opening Day. And how much have you thought about last year during this offseason?
I guess a little bit. You know, there's certain takeaways from last year that were positive, and certain things that you go into the off season not wanting to think about or repeat again. And so I think our failures were definitely something that I thought about all off season and how we can fix those things and what we can do to address certain things that didn't go well. And so for me, I've had a really good outlook on this whole year. Just it's kind of a I don't think that it's going to be a rebuilding year as much as it is a refreshing year, if that makes sense. I think we're going to have a renewed energy. It's going to be a different Clubhouse vibe. I'm kind of comparing it in a lot of ways to 2008, except I'm the old guy now. You know, there's going to be a lot of new faces, a lot of uncertainty as far as what we should expect out of the players that we got and a lot of the trades that we made. And I think it's going to be a great year for Kevin Cash and his homecoming. And he's excited to do it. We've talked multiple times, and I'm excited to be a part of it.
Evan, you took the words right out of my mouth. We were mentioning it last week during the show that people have been asking us when they see us, is it a rebuilding year? Are we going to a youth movement? What are we doing? And I had been trying to tell everybody, to me, it's more like we're hitting the refresh button on your computer. Most of the elements are still there, and when it comes back, we might get rid of a few of the bugs. We might clear some of the cookies and some of the deleted files that no longer need to hang around. But we still have a pretty good core group and a pretty good setup. And my question to you is, when you were watching all these things happen, going back to the day that Andrew left, to the day that Joe moved on, to the day that we hired Kevin Cash, I mean, you are the face of the franchise. How involved were you? How many times were you on the phone maybe with Matt? And what was your offseason like, just kind of watching it like we were for a little while, even maybe from as far away as Japan while you were over there playing for a little while?
Honestly, a lot of the time was spent just focused on getting ready for Japan, going over there to play, and then being a new dad. I talked a couple times with Matt during the hiring process before Kevin was hired, and just briefly about his thoughts moving forward. But I expressed to him that ultimately I'm player, and you know he's general manager. He's the one that's making the calls, and I said the same thing to Kevin when we met the first time. I was like, you know, I understand that you guys have you know, a certain amount of respect for me because at this point I'd be the longest tenured guy. But regardless, I mean, I believe in what they are trying to do. I believe in what they believe in. And ultimately, I think that's what's most important at the end of the day, is that we all kind of have this collective vision of what we want to happen. And I believe that even without my input or anybody else's input, that they have put together something that has a chance to be pretty special.
You know, Matt was just down with us, and he used the word we. You know, I'm not saying that there was a lot of I last year, but even just kind of watching Matt put this team together, I get the feeling that there's going to be a more cohesive clubhouse, and I think there's also going to be a more coachable clubhouse. Is that something that you would agree with, or maybe am I overstepping my bounds? What do you kind of see it that way as well?
I think it's that's something that's really tough to gauge. You know, just based off of the moves we made and the personnel that we brought in, I think that there's a lot of potential there for greatness. And I think Matt using the word "we" is just indicative of his character and the kind of GM that he's striving to be. And I think you know, if you talk to anybody around the league, that he learned, or I wouldn't say under, but you know, watched one of the premier general managers in the game now, obviously, and Andrew, they kind of worked hand in hand for a lot of years, and I think he has a lot of experience in dealing with those sorts of situations, even if he didn't go through it himself. So I really believe that he has a firm grasp on what he wants to do, and now we just have to go out and perform and really put it all together.
What do you do during the off season physically to get ready for the next season? I know, as we've been saying, you're in Japan, you became a dad for the second time. Our heartiest congratulations, of course, about all that stuff. But you know, it's so funny when you think of all the years ago when guys would not really get into shape until they got to camp. But you're always in great physical shape when you get to camp, and you've been able to be quite durable, especially over the last couple of years. You have the longest active streak going in terms of consecutive games started in Major League Baseball. So what do you do during the off season, and amongst all the other things you have going on, to keep yourself in physical shape, and how much baseball activity do you do during the off season?
This year, I've actually done more. I've been working out at what used to be Athletes Performance. It's called Exos now. I've been back there this year after about 4 years of not being there. But just kind of, I've said it before, it's just, I feel like when I was 24, 25, at the end of the season, I was so tired. And, you just go through the day-to-day grind, and you wonder when you're 29 like I am now, or 32 or 33, how your body's going to feel. And you realize when you get there that you just know your body a little bit better every year. And I feel as good as I've ever felt coming into spring. And I don't know if it's because I've just not worked harder, but worked smarter, and just kind of identified the things that I need to get myself ready for spring training. And I think, nowadays it's so competitive, especially when you get into professional baseball, and you look at the amount of work that young kids are putting in. So I think coming into spring training ready is it's so important, because spring training is so long, and the days are so long that your body starts to break down pretty quickly if you're not in pretty good physical shape already. And so just try to really pinpoint the things that worked for me in the past and build on those every year.
Evan, when people look right at the back of the baseball card, and they always want to look at batting average, RBIs, home runs, and last year was a pretty good start for the first month, and then things kind of went down for a little bit. Then you had a nice second half. You were one of the top RBI guys in the game. Andy and I during broadcasts would have a tendency to say that it seemed like maybe you were trying to do too much, hitting that 3-run homer with nobody on base. And that's just, again, the competitive nature of yourself. When you look back at last year, when you look at where you're at right now in your career and looking around the guys, I mean, maybe we're putting too much pressure on you, because we feel like you have a trickle-up effect on the guys in front of you. If you're swinging the bat very, very well, the guys in front of you might see better pitches. And if you're swinging the bat well, obviously the guys behind you are going to do a little bit better, because this pressure is going to be off that you got a big hit. Do you put that pressure on yourself too, or is that maybe overstated on our parts?
No, I mean, I completely agree with that. I've said it before. There's nobody that wants to succeed and wants to get that hit and wants to be in that moment, presented with that moment where, you're in a situation to get a game winning hit, or, in the seventh inning and there's a couple guys on with two outs and you got a chance to break the game open. I mean, I put that pressure on myself more so than anybody. And so when things aren't going good, it's tough to deal with it on a daily basis. But, I think one of the things that I've been reading quite a bit this off season, and one of the kind of the themes of all of the books that I've been reading is the amount of times that successful people have to fail, and be able to just get back up again and stand in the face of that adversity and just be able to on a daily basis turn the page. And so it's not always going to be glorious. And I was thinking about it today, because I've been putting some videos of my tee work and hitting and stuff on Twitter, just for the kids that follow me, or the people that follow me, to see what I do. And I've been meaning to put some videos on there where I've just been bad, because I put videos on there where that's just good swing and good swing, and I can tailor it and edit it to make it all look good, but the reality of it is you take two good swings and then you take three bad ones, and then you take, whatever it is, it's not all good. And so that it just goes to the whole notion that it's not always going to be glamorous, and you have to be able to take all the bad that comes with the good.
Have you tweeted the names of the books that you're reading? I mean, there's a lot. I'm being serious. I mean, I think there's a lot of people out there that wouldn't mind maybe reading a few of those books, because a lot of people get knocked down and have to bounce back.
Yeah, no,
up.
I mean, I haven't. I would say, I've been listening to. There's a motivational speaker. I haven't seen any of his new stuff, but his name's Les Brown, and he's. I just listen to him every day, and it's all about big failure and being able to cope with it. But I read, you probably know the book Alive, about the plane crash.
Yes.
The 72 Andy, Chilean Andes. And those guys, there was a book written in 2006 or 2007 by one of the survivors. And it's a really kind of a gripping account of how he basically had to fight through all this adversity. And then I read another one more recently called Bounce that was actually given to me by Kevin Long, who's now the hitting coach for the Mets. And it's really another interesting book about the power of practice and purposeful practice and how, you know, on a daily basis, you have to challenge yourself to fail basically during practice in order to get better.
All right, well, we only have about 30 seconds, and I'm probably overstepping here. My producers are telling us to wrap it up. But you were on the course, what was it, yesterday with John Lester, and he hit a hole-in-one?
Yeah, it was.
I mean, I see a bunch of fives on that seven, on that par three, but I see 1-1 on that scorecard. Yeah. I mean, how impressive was that?
Well, none of us know what to do after he made it. So, like, I would just whack away and get up there. But it was awesome, man. We were playing at actually my home course, the course I play at a bunch, and I've played that hole probably 50 times and I've never even come close. And the first time he plays it, he hits it. It's like the green slopes right to left hard, and he hit it like off the right edge of the green, and it just was like slow motion right in.
Well, I hope he bought.
And it was a pretty cool moment.
Hope he bought a few rounds after. I think you're supposed to do that when you get the hole in one. So
yeah, I had to go pick up L. But
well, hey Evan, thanks again for taking the time. We look forward to seeing you down there again. I'm with you. This is we've hit the refresh button, and I think we've got some freshness coming up down in Port Charlotte. Look forward to seeing you next week.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thank you.
Evan Longoria joining us here. And again, hey, don't forget Valentine's Day is Saturday. Get your special someone a gift. You can enjoy together with the Rays Fan Fest Flex Pack. These 3, 6, or 9 game packs all come with a Kevin Kiermaier bobblehead. Pricing starts at just $59. Call 888-FAN-RAYS or visit RaysBaseball.com. We'll take a break, come back, wrap it up after this on 620 WDAE and the Rays Baseball Network.